This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Last night, NATO mounted its heaviest air raids yet on Belgrade. This morning, we called Belgrade to talk with Aleksa Djilas, a Serb writer who lives in the heart of the city. He's been critical of Milosevic in the past, but he's strongly opposed to the NATO bombing. He's an active voice in Serb political debate, appearing regularly on TV as a political analyst and writing articles for several publications. He's had several op-ed pieces published in the New York Times. Djilas is the author of the book The Contested Country, Yugoslav Unity and Communist Revolution, and he's a former research associate at Harvard's Russian Research Center. I asked him which night of bombing was the worst for him.
Well, interestingly, you know, I'm a kind of person who is nervous before the event, you know. Like, when I went to school and to the university, I would be nervous. I was anxious before the exam. But when the exam started, I was not, you know. So for me, the most anxious were the first few days of bombing. For example, the night after Javier Solana, General Secretary of NATO, authorized airstrikes against Yugoslavia, then I was nervous. But then once the first bombs started to fall, and then when I saw some houses burning and broken glass and so on, so all this became somehow real for me. Then since then, I'm coping mostly, right? At the beginning, I've had several nights where I hardly slept at all. But now, I mean, I cannot say I sleep well, but I do sleep, you know, so I'm doing well. My wife suffered very badly during the first week because we have two small children, you know. The daughter is 2 years old and the son is 4 years old. My wife, by the way, is in her mid-30s. She's a dentist. And she, for the first 7 days, she hardly ate and slept and lost something like 12 pounds. And 6 pounds were a welcome loss, but the rest should have stayed where it was. And we used to joke, you know, is this finally the West has discovered the perfect quickie diet, you know, but that sort of macabre humor. But then, of course, for example, people with children are very nervous. Then older people are quite nervous. And another interesting phenomenon in Belgrade, right, no one has noticed this, you know. But Belgrade, in a sense, has become a city of refugees, you know, because Belgrade has something like 2 million inhabitants. And very many people have left Belgrade. You know, they went either to Hungary or they went to the villages surrounding Belgrade, where they believe, you know, people believe there will be less bombing. Although, of course, that's very tricky, you know, because sometimes you go to a village and exactly there is where the aircraft attack you. And then many people are moving inside Belgrade. You know, for example, people who live near a bridge, right, would leave because they think the bridge may be hit.
How come everyone isn't in a bomb shelter?
Well, you see, this is a very good question. We have bomb shelters here, and some are quite good in the sense that they are solid and so on. Also, of course, even if you don't have a properly made bomb shelter, you can go to your cellar, right, which could serve as a bomb shelter. And many people do go, but a large majority doesn't. And the reason is very simple, you see, because air attacks last, for example, in Belgrade, my estimate is on average 12 hours, right? And then, of course, to spend 12 hours in this cramped space where the air is damp, you know, it's also cold, and especially with small children who kind of cry and sometimes even get ill, right? And also, it's a kind of very great pressure on your psyche because there are always some people who are panicking. You know, people tell all sorts of exaggerated stories and so on. So that's one reason why people don't go to bomb shelters. And, of course, NATO announced that they are going to keep all of Serbia under air attacks 24 hours a day, right? And that, of course, there is no military rationale for that, right? I mean, an air attack on Belgrade, there is no military reason why it has to last 12 hours, right? But I think they're doing this partly to break the will of the people and to wear them out and so on, you know. I mean, NATO, of course, the easiest way to wear people out would be to start shooting at civilians. But, of course, the public opinion in the West, in particular in America, right, would not accept that, you know, killing hundreds of civilians intentionally. So they're then trying to think of kind of other ways, you know, within, to coin a phrase, the limits of military correctness, you know, where they could kind of intimidate the population without going for an all-out slaughter, which, needless to say, you know, American public or West European public would not accept. This is my explanation, my guess. Of course, it could be something else there.
What makes you think that, you said, if I heard you correctly, that you think NATO, if it could, would actually be targeting civilians? Is that what you said?
Fair enough. I mean, when I say NATO, I stay corrected, right? I don't mean, for example, I think that majority of NATO when we speak of NATO as kind of countries in NATO, would disapprove of that. My guess would be, you know, there's some commanding officers, you know, but this is, I'm just saying, this is my impression, my estimate. I could easily be wrong. Would favor that, you know. For example, let us say the American four-star general Wesley Clark, who is the commander of NATO in Europe and who is in charge of these operations. My judgment of his personality is that he's someone so obsessed with power, with victory, right? There is a sadistic streak when you listen to him, the way he speaks, the way he formulates sentences, you know. I mean, really enjoying the power that he has, the fear he inspires. For example, that kind of man, I could imagine, would attack civilian buildings. But as I said, you know, I could be unfair to Kim. This is just my impression. And you have to say, you know, I have also to add that when you are in a city which is being bombed, you know, you tend to judge harshly those who bomb you. So with these reservations, accept what I just said.
How do you think the NATO bombing is affecting popular opinion about Milosevic in Serbia?
You know, the many people in America expected that once first cruise missiles hit their targets, you know, people will turn against Milosevic. I was always telling people, you know, this is, you know, sort of billion-dollar miscalculation and misjudgment. And of course, you know, the moment bombs started hitting, right, opposition simply disappeared, right? I mean, we are not divided anymore in Serbia into those who are for Milosevic or against Milosevic. We are all united against NATO bombing. And this is not so peculiar. For example, Americans unite around the president in time of war. And of course, America fights wars far away from its own territory. And imagine if America was attacked, right? I mean, you know, all sins and follies of President Clinton would be immediately forgotten, right? That does not mean, of course, this is something that people don't understand. It does not mean Milosevic has become extremely popular, right? I mean, those who are against him, including myself, are still against him, right? And I don't think that if there were elections, you know, that now or in few weeks, that he would win an overwhelming victory. Far from it. Nevertheless, we have put internal politics on hold. You know, political parties don't exhibit party symbols. There is very little kind of political debate, and we are all concentrated on one hand of just stopping the bombing and somehow surviving, and on the other hand on somehow resolving the Kosovo crisis. So in that sense, it was a victory of Milosevic. But you don't see much of him, you know. For example, there are public meetings everywhere in Serbia. Every day there is one in Belgrade, you know, accompanied with rock music and so on, just to boost people's morale. And you rarely see Milosevic's pictures, right? You sometimes see them in smaller towns in Serbia where he has more support, you know, but very little. And for example, if a speaker mentions his name, there is a rather anemic applause, you know. So he has not become, some people say, he's becoming Churchill of Serbia. This is not true. But it is even less true to believe and to hope that he will be overthrown and that people will turn against him.
My guest is Aleksa Gilas, a Serb writer and political analyst who's joining us by phone from his home in Belgrade. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our phone call to Aleksa Gilas in Belgrade. He's a Serb writer and political analyst and a former research associate at Harvard's Russian Research Center. You had said that if there were an election tomorrow that Milosevic probably would win it, but not by a huge margin. But it strikes me that we're not talking about just politics as usual. President Milosevic is responsible for ethnic cleansing in Kosovo now. And, you know, I imagine you're aware of the hundreds of thousands of refugees who have been forced out of Kosovo. And I'm wondering how that's affected your opinion and the opinion of people who you're close to about Milosevic.
People in Serbia are not aware. I mean, they kind of know that something, that there is lots of fighting in Kosovo and that people are leaving. But they're not aware how many refugees have left Kosovo. Right. So this is one reason. Then, of course, you know, I have to tell you the story about Kosovo, right? Milosevic has ruled Serbia for 12 years, as I said before. And he has not practiced ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. You can accuse Milosevic of many things when Albanians in Kosovo are concerned. You can accuse him, and I did accuse him in numerous articles and interviews, that, for example, why did he take away the autonomy, or most of it, to Kosovo Albanians? The police force in Kosovo was mixed Albanian-Serbian. Under Milosevic, it became almost completely Serbian. Many Albanians were dismissed from work, right? There were cases of police brutality, you know, people arrested without good reason and so on. But these were more kind of human rights, minority rights violations. There was no large-scale cleansing, and the number of people killed in Kosovo for many years was very, very small, right? Then the situation became worse with the appearance of Kosovo Liberation Army in 96. There you have the beginnings of a low-level civil war, but still we are talking about, you know, maybe 15, 20 people killed every year, both policemen and fighters of the Kosovo Liberation Army and innocent civilians and so on. This I'm mostly quoting Amnesty International reports, right? It's not some Serbian sources. But then it was only the bombing, which started 3 years ago, which transformed this low-level civil war into a real civil war. So what I think is going on in Kosovo, right, and this is based on just my general knowledge of nationalist conflicts both in the Balkans and elsewhere. I don't have any direct information from Kosovo, but I also watch, for example, CNN and Sky News and German television programs. What I think has happened is that, first of all, because of the bombing, many people have left just to run away from bombing. And I'm certain that this is the main cause, because so many people in Belgrade, as I told you at the very beginning, right, have left their home because they are afraid of bombing. And Kosovo is bombed much more intensely, with much greater ferocity than Belgrade.
I want to stop you for a second. Yep. Now, you said that you are certain that it's the NATO bombing that's driving the refugees out of Kosovo.
No. But I think this is the main cause, but I'm also...
Well, the main cause, but according to the reports coming out of... across the border from Kosovo, in Macedonia, for instance, and where the other refugees are going, reporters are saying that the stories they're getting from refugees aren't about fleeing the bombs. It's about fleeing or being forced out by Serbs who knock at the door and at gunpoint force you to leave right then and there. People don't have time to gather their belongings. They don't even have time to get all their clothes on. And they're just being forced out. And that's story after story after story supports that. Do you think that those reports have any credibility at all?
Absolutely. As I tried to explain to you in my previous answer, I'm not saying that there is no ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. I'm saying that there is no planned and systematic ethnic cleansing in Kosovo, and that the major reason why people are leaving is the bombing, right? But as I said, there is a civil war being fought in Kosovo. In this civil war, you have on one side Kosovo Liberation Army and part of Albanian population which supports it. On the other side, you have Serbs, Serbian minority in Kosovo, their local militias and paramilitary force. I believe that both these groups, I have no direct evidence, but just by, you know, studying nationalism in Yugoslavia, in the Balkans, and in general, I'm sure that these groups commit crimes against civilians and that they expel civilians. And I would expect that in that sense, you know, Serbian local militias and paramilitaries have probably expelled Albanians, yes. But what I'm trying to say is that this is not something Milosevic of Serbia have planned before, because, you know, they had 12 years of his rule to do that, and they haven't done it. Why would they be waiting for NATO bombing, where, from the point of view of Serbia's international reputation, it is the most damaging thing they could possibly do, to do something which in any case cannot give any lasting results? Because even if you expelled several hundred thousand Albanians from Kosovo, they would still remain an overwhelming majority in Kosovo. And in any case, you know, these people who are expelled, most of them will return, right? Everyone knows that the moment a peace treaty is signed. In any case, the official policy of the Yugoslav government, the proclaimed goal, is the return of refugees. They are calling refugees back all the time. The column of refugees, which was, I hope, accidentally attacked by a NATO bomber yesterday, they were actually returning from Albania from Albania into Kosovo. So I'm not in any way saying that there is no ethnic cleansing or that no Serbian forces have committed crimes against humanity. I'm saying that this is not planned, systematic operation. And that a lion's share of responsibility for whatever is happening in Kosovo now lies with NATO. Because before NATO attacks, you had a kind of low-level civil war. In Kosovo, you had human rights violations of minority rights. You had some massacres, both committed by KLA and Serbian forces. But no one, no international observer verifying mission, no Western journalist, spoke of ethnic cleansing, right? So to the extent that that there is ethnic cleansing in Kosovo, it is either directly or indirectly caused by NATO bombing. By this, I don't mean that there are no Serbian Serbs in Kosovo who should not be brought to trial. Of course there are.
Let me ask you, I know that you don't think that Milosevic is responsible for ethnic cleansing and that you doubt that that is going on in anything like the scale that's been reported. But say hypothetically it was.
Yes.
Say hypothetically that you believed it was, is what I mean.
Okay.
Do you think that the bombing of Serbia would be an appropriate response to that? Do you think that the bombing of Serbia would be an appropriate way to try to get President Milosevic to stop the ethnic cleansing, or do you think that risking the lives of civilians, even though they're not directly being targeted, is an inappropriate way?
Well, I mean, if I really knew, you know, that people, if you ask me personally, if I really knew that people, that ordinary Albanians in Kosovo are somehow helped by the hardship we are enduring, right, I would probably say, okay, guys, carry on, right? Of course, most Serbs would not agree with me, right? Because, you know, everyone is primarily interested in his own security. And I have to tell you, Americans are not any different. For example, most Americans are much more concerned that three American soldiers are in Serbian captivity than by the fact that, for example, NATO plane struck a factory which was not military, or that it hit the day before yesterday a train where whatever, some dozen civilians were killed, you know. So every nation is primarily, you know, concerned about its own suffering. So most people here would tell you no. I personally would tell you yes, you know. Even if it was absolutely right that there was systematic ethnic cleansing in Kosovo, and even if the only way to stop it would be to bomb Serbia, I would expect that overwhelming majority of Serbs would be against it. I personally, as I said, I would be for it, but that's just a mini minority.
I want to ask you a few more things about what life is like in Belgrade now. How much of what you do on a daily basis has been directly affected by the bombing? And I'm thinking specifically, are there places that supply your food or places that you would go on a daily basis that don't exist anymore?
Well, as far, you know, shops are still full, but many people say that most of industry does not work. And, of course, there are very little imports. And we suspect that soon, government will not be able, people will not get their monthly wages. So the government will have to issue coupons. You see what I mean? Like for milk and cooking oil and whatever, potatoes and so on. So many people, including myself, you know, we have bought some food, you know, so that it can last us maybe a month, you know. I probably would not have done this if I lived on my own, you know, but when you have two children, you tend to think along those lines, you know. And then, of course, there are no cigarettes, or there is a shortage of cigarettes, rather. And so things like that. But, for example, traffic still functions, and you can even hire a taxi in Belgrade. You know, so that means there is still enough gasoline.
I was glad that you were able to talk with us today because it was my understanding that it was against the law now in Serbia to give interviews to the foreign press. Is that against the law now?
I am not aware of such a law. But I can tell you, for example, that let us say, you know, no one has tried to censor me for many years in which I have criticized government, Milosevic, Serbia, nationalism, and so on, you know. If anyone had tried to censor me, for example, I don't know, several months ago, for example, I would have said no, I will not be censored, and I would have been ready to go to jail. I'm saying this without any pathos. I mean, that's something I have thought about a lot, and that was my decision. For example, but let us see if after our conversation now, for example, tomorrow, you know, state security knocks on my door and tells me, you know, we think, you know, your interviews are bad for the security of our country. I would try to convince them that they are not, right? But if they insisted, I would probably stop giving interviews, not because I'm afraid of them, but because I would be thinking that under the circumstances and in the situation where we are in war, it is not patriotic to challenge the authorities. But I'm not sure. I haven't made up my mind, you know. But this is probably the 30th interview I have given since the war started, and no one ever has threatened me in any way. So I hope it doesn't happen.
Alexa Gilas spoke to us from his home in Belgrade. We recorded our interview earlier today. Gilas is the author of the book The Contested Country, Yugoslav Unity and Communist Revolution, and he's a former research associate at Harvard's Russian Research Center. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.